Anxiety shouldn't be your norm. Get the powerful, safe audio system for anxiety over at quietbegins.com.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani and I'm here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about in the show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, I am sitting at an empty desk. All I have is a little digital recorder and my little portable microphone. And I posted this on my Facebook page earlier, and it shows a picture of it. So if you go to my Facebook page at The Overwhelmed Brain on Facebook, you'll see it because my desk has been cleaned off because I am building a little shelf that is more stable. It's, you know, I got to support a lot of equipment here. So I work from home and I take care of this stuff by myself. I don't have a crew that comes in and stabilizes and organizes and maintains anything. So I do it myself, which means I'm waiting for paint to dry and I'm going to have to put some hardware on my desk and make it all happen. But why does this matter? How does this matter to you? My post on Facebook said, sometimes you got to do the best you can with what you got. And I live by that motto most of the time. I mean, you may not have listened to all my episodes, but if you had, you probably heard me talk about once when I was divorced. I pretty much had a few things to my name, and I was dwindling in reserve funding. I didn't have much funding left, and I ended up living at my mom's place for a little less than a year in her basement. So I've been in this little situation before where I didn't have much. I'm not saying I'm there now. I'm actually much better off now. I'm with my girlfriend and we bought a house and we're in a much better position now. But at the time, I did what I could with what I had. And this is what happens in life. We're thrown these curveballs and sometimes we have to do the best we can with what we have. And it can still work. And we don't have to think that this is how it's going to stay. We just have to get through that moment. And sometimes that moment lasts for years. There are times in my life where moments have lasted for years. I was pretty much without a job when I was married for two of those years. What was it, 2 years? Probably a little less than 2 years. But my wife and I were married. In fact, we got married the day I was completely unemployed and we had no money. That was the day of our marriage. We actually continued and moved forward with the marriage, just decided to have a very small gathering in San Diego. I don't live there anymore, but back then we had her best friend and we had a reverend and we just got married. And that was the day that we were broke. So we did the best we could with what we had. And we had basically very little. I want to say nothing, but it was very little because her mom really pulled through and we were able to live in her tiny little apartment while we were trying to get back on our feet. But that was a while. That took a long time. That was around the mortgage crisis. And, you know, this is a little over 11 years ago now. And when that happened, we both had no income. We both had no jobs. And we were, very fortunate that we had somebody in one of our family that helped us during that time. But we were still going to the soup kitchen every morning. We were still picking up boxes of food at the local church and just doing what we could to survive because the person we were living with couldn't support us. And nor did we expect her to. We were just lucky to have a bedroom and a bathroom. We are very fortunate. But doing the best you can with what you have means that sometimes you have to accept what comes along. Sometimes you have to make your life work even when you feel like it's not working. And this can apply to a number of circumstances, a number of relationships in our lives. We can't see those as permanent. We can't see those as something that's going to last unless you want it to. Most of us don't want it to. Most of us don't want to just accept what we have when it's not what we want. I did not want to be without work and without money and living out of a 600 square foot apartment with three people for that amount of time. I was very grateful. I was not complaining. I was so grateful that I could have a shower every morning. And being grateful really helped push us through that time. But at the same time, we weren't necessarily suffering. However, you know, we bring our own suffering often. We think if we have zero in our bank account that it's something to suffer. And in some cases, there is suffering. And in some cases, there's not, because there are programs in place. There are family members that show up. There are friends that show up and really help us out. And sometimes there's not. Sometimes we don't have a place to live. We have no money and we're hungry. And that can happen. And even still, like when I lived in Portland, Oregon, there were people that were doing the best they could, even though they had no place to live. I'm not saying that that's all right and we shouldn't feel sympathy for these people. Absolutely. We should feel sympathy for people that have it harder than us. And when we look at people that have it harder, they have challenges that maybe exceed our challenges. I think that's how we can access gratitude and appreciation, where we can see somebody that's not doing as well as us, even if we're not doing well. This is how I looked at the comparison game probably a couple years back. I came out with an episode where I talked about how we compare ourselves to other people and we feel less than them. We feel maybe jealous or envious, like that person has more money, they're better looking, they have a better husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend. They have so many other things that are better than what I have. And so we compare ourselves to people and situations that we would want in our life, but we don't usually compare ourselves to the people that don't have what we have. And that really messes with our heads because we're comparing ourselves to the wrong people. If you spend your time comparing yourself to people that have more than you and that you think have a better life than you and are better equipped for life and can get the best of anything, then you're comparing yourself to the wrong people. I had to learn this the hard way too. When I first started my own business and I looked at other businesses and they were skyrocketing and mine was going nowhere. In fact, mine was in the negative for at least 3 or 4 years. And I would look at these businesses and I would feel jealous and maybe a little angry. This is before I practiced a lot of what I teach now. And I would look at these businesses and think, what are they doing that I'm not doing? How come they're so successful? And I would get discouraged. And then eventually I decided that maybe I was comparing myself to the wrong people because I would see people online or social media or people I knew that were struggling in their business a lot more than I was. And so I thought, what am I really complaining about? And what am I really disappointed in? Because I've gotten this far with the tools that I have and the resources that I have access to, and they've gotten not as far as I have. And sometimes they have the same tools and sometimes they don't. Sometimes people know what to do with those tools and sometimes they don't. And so I started comparing myself to people that maybe wanted to be where I was and suddenly felt different. I just felt more grateful. I felt more at peace in myself because it made me realize that I was comparing myself to the wrong people. If you beat yourself up, if you have a lot of negative inner dialogue, and if you have especially any jealousy or enviousness, if you envy anyone, then I think it's important that you reorganize your thoughts so that you're comparing yourself to the right people. Because when you start comparing yourself to the people that like what you have and want what you have and maybe look up to you in some way or look at you as a success, then suddenly you're in a different state of mind. I mean, this works in almost any category. If you have two legs and you can walk around and you see somebody with no legs, it's an entirely different perception. You will change your thought process. You will change how you feel about yourself, especially, and how you feel about other people. And if you already do this, congratulations, you are 10 steps ahead of me from 11 years ago. And if you don't do this, it is something to start practicing, because we do end up comparing ourselves a lot to the wrong people. And not that those people are wrong, it's just that we're using the wrong references to judge ourselves and criticize ourselves and talk down about ourselves, thinking that we haven't done enough or haven't done well. And really what it comes down to is that there's always going to be somebody out there that does better than you, that looks better than you, that is happier than you, has more money than you. There's always going to be somebody out there like that. You can't get away from that. And because of that, you have to accept the inevitability that you really aren't the best. Welcome to the Personal Growth Show that demotivates you and tells you the truth. This is the truth. You are not the best. You have work to do. You need to continue working on yourself, because there are people that look up to you. There are people that look at you as the success. And there are also people that are doing much better than you, that look better than you, that are wealthier than you, or maybe they have money and you don't. There are lots of people up and down the spectrum, and you have to put yourself in a place that makes you realize that you are doing better than so many other people. And I realize I'm saying this, you could be suffering right now. I realize you could be going through a lot, and it's very, very hard to see the positive side of things when you're going through a lot. But if you stay in that frame of mind where you are just focused on your suffering and you really can't see outside that suffering, then you may continue the suffering. It just may happen. And this isn't to minimize your suffering, because your suffering is real. Any pain or negativity that you go through is absolutely real, and you absolutely have every right to feel the way you feel about it, because it's yours. It's something that nobody else is experiencing. The way you experience it and the way you process it is yours and yours alone. So no one will ever know your suffering. I mean, as far as how you process the negativity in your life. So because no one will ever understand or know the depth of your suffering, it's very difficult for others to understand what you're going through, because you might beat yourself up if you know that there are other people suffering worse than you in different areas of their life, and you may even believe that maybe you shouldn't complain because they have it worse. But I don't believe that. I believe that you need to acknowledge your suffering. You need to really feel it and make it happen and make sure that you fully acknowledge that your suffering is valid and you have every right to feel that way. I don't care if you get a flat tire and it's the worst thing that's ever happened in your life, and you start to beat yourself up because you're complaining about it, because there are people in the world that are suffering, that are hungry, and you just have a flat tire. Somebody else might see that and go, you're just being frivolous. It's a first world problem, too bad, but it's real to you. It affects you. And if it affects you that negatively, then you have every right to feel that way, because it's happening to you. And your life is affected by it. And it's not that you stay in that frame of mind. I don't want you to do that. I want you to just acknowledge it and validate it and say, I have every right to feel how I feel. So I don't care if anybody comes along and says, you shouldn't be mad at that. There are other people that are suffering much worse than you. You can say, look, my feelings are real and this is what I'm feeling. I mean, you may not have that conversation. It may lead to a worse conversation that you don't want to have, but you have every right to feel that way. Now, that doesn't mean you stay in that feeling. Like I was saying, you don't want to stay in that state of mind, because it's not a healthy, happy state of mind. It is an unproductive, unresourceful state of mind. I love to acknowledge my fears, my pain, my anger, any type of suffering that I'm going through, just to make sure that I validate it in myself. I want you to validate this stuff in yourself. because other people may not. So you really need to show up for yourself. You validate it and you say, okay, this is what's happening to me. I have every right to feel this way because it's affecting me. It's affecting me directly. It affects no one else the same way it affects me, and no one else will ever understand the way it affects me. So I'm just going to acknowledge it, validate it, and then I'm going to try to let it go because I have to move on. I can't stay in that state of mind. This is where I want to go with this episode today is, how do you let something go? Is there a process for letting something go? And the things we want to let go are often our emotional triggers. So when you're carrying around something that affects you, something negative, like, oh man, ever since I had that flat tire 4 weeks ago, my life has been in a shambles. I had to work overtime to get the extra money to buy a spare tire. I still haven't had time to go to the garage and get the spare put on yet, so I'm using this little donut on my tire, and I'm driving around with that. So this could affect your life in a lot of ways. Something that small might seem huge to certain people. You carry around some negativity. And like I said, I want to talk about this negativity today and how it creates an emotional trigger inside of us, or it can create an emotional trigger, because if somebody mentions something about a flat tire in the future, you could be affected. Oh, that day I had a flat tire, oh, my whole week was ruined. I mean, that can happen. Again, that might be a little bit benign, because emotional triggers are typically more traumatic things that have happened. Again, trauma to you might be different trauma to somebody else, but something traumatic that happened to you earlier or in childhood that created an event in your mind that gets recalled every time something happens that is similar to the event that happened. You may not even connect the dots. I mean, you could have an event that happens in your life today that has nothing to do with what happened in childhood, except for some root similarities. And those root similarities could be enough to trigger an emotional response that makes you feel bad. My stepfather, for example, when I was growing up, he would drink a lot of alcohol. And when he did, he changed into a different person. And so as a child, I did not want that to happen. I still don't want it to happen, but he does it anyway. But I became fearful because that different person was scary. And that created an emotional trigger at that moment. It associated drinking with fear and probably emotional pain. And so when I got into my adult relationships, this emotional pain would appear anytime alcohol appeared. Now, this is when I was in my 20s, still learning about life and relationships, but somebody I love in my life would drink and I would feel almost a betrayal. I would almost call it a betrayal, where they would drink alcohol and it would feel like a betrayal to me because they were doing something that made me afraid or made me feel emotional pain. And when that happened, I became judgmental toward them. And all of my judgments came from childhood and appeared in my adult relationships and caused the failure of all of them, because I was so critical of the people I was with. But the emotional trigger that was formed back then stayed with me for a long time until I decided to look at it. And the stuff I'm going to talk about today has to do with looking at your emotional triggers. You know, I talked about a flat tire causing an emotional response like this in your life. It's probably not that. Probably something else in your life. That was a benign example, but probably something more traumatic that you went through that created an emotional trigger. And just to clarify what an emotional trigger is to me, it's something that you have a negative reaction to when it happens. And this doesn't mean that if you see an injustice in front of you and you have this reaction, that it's because of an emotional trigger. It could be associated with that, but emotional triggers are usually memories that we carry around with us throughout our lives. And when something happens now that is similar to what happened in the past, we respond to it as if it's happening now. Just the same as post-traumatic stress disorder. People in the military who have been in stressful situations while they were in the military can have post-traumatic stress, just like you can have a post-trauma response to something that happened in your past. And I talk about emotional triggers a lot in this show because I think a lot of people have an underlying river of emotional negativity that is way down that prevents them from experiencing as much happiness as they possibly can. I mean, maybe not even happiness, just a level of peace and comfort that they can. I remember walking around with this underlayer of negativity all the time, and it wouldn't go away, and I could never experience happiness fully, and I could feel it. I always felt like there was more. I mean, have you ever felt like you could be happier? You could experience more? And I'm not talking about like, I wish I had a better Mercedes or Rolls Royce. I'm talking about just the internal feelings that you carry with you. It seems like there's not as much happiness or comfort or peace in there that there could be. If you've ever felt like that, there's probably some emotional stuff that maybe needs healing and processing. And they're not always triggered. Sometimes something will happen and you won't be triggered, but you just can't get away from that underlying feeling. So I'm kind of going everywhere with this right now, but I wanted to just lay this roadmap out for you to give us a foundation of the basics of what I'm going to talk about today, which is asking yourself questions. Questions are always the answer, in my opinion, when it comes to personal healing. And questions are also the path to discovery and digging deeper into yourself. In fact, if you're going to take anything away from this episode today, I highly recommend you take this away. Never convince yourself or tell yourself anything. Always just ask questions. That's it. You just ask yourself questions so that you're always digging deeper. Because if you stay in question mode, what it does is it prevents you from going into self-criticizing or self-judging mode. And when you continue asking yourself questions, you continue looking for every angle, every perspective, and keep uncovering small tidbits that lead to a bigger picture that eventually exposes the entire picture so that it can hopefully finally dissipate. How does that work? Well, the negative event from the past can dissipate once you have uncovered every angle, almost always, because what you end up doing is you find what you're resisting that you don't want to experience. You discover what you're resisting. You cause yourself to address what you're resisting by continuing to ask yourself questions. A good example of somebody carrying around something that they resist might be my girlfriend. My girlfriend hates the sound of brushing teeth. She hates when I brush my teeth, and so I have to do it in the bathroom with the door closed. And I've often said, let's explore this, let's figure this out. And she doesn't want to. She just wants to stop listening to it and get away from the sound. And even the times that we did bring it up and talk about it and dig and I ask questions, she gets so creeped out that she doesn't want to continue. So this is something that she keeps resisting, and she wants to address it. She would like to get rid of it, but it's just too much for her to handle. So she doesn't address it. And I'm not forcing that on her. Someday she'll be ready to deal with it and figure it out. But maybe it's not even a problem. If it's not a problem for her, it's not a problem for me. But there are other sounds that trigger it. This is an emotional trigger for her because she'll hear another sound that sounds like the same thing, and she'll have to block her ears and hum and not listen to it. And it's funny at the same time. It's probably really bothersome to her. That's a good example of somebody resisting. And when you resist, it persists. It also amplifies. This is what I've seen in resistance over and over again. When you resist something that you don't want to deal with, that you don't want to think about, it will amplify, it will persist, and you will continue carrying that underlayer of negativity with you. Now, this doesn't mean it's going to prevent you from being happy. It might do it in small doses. Like, for her, I have a feeling this just comes in small doses. When she hears the sound, she doesn't like it. She gets creeped out. She blocks her ears. She walks away. I close the door. But then after that, it's over. She's not thinking about it. It doesn't sneak up on her unless it's the sound. So that's more of an emotional trigger than anything that's like an underlying stream of negativity. That can exist in our lives too. And I like to get rid of those things myself. It doesn't mean I work on it all the time, but when something bothers me to the point of almost debilitation, like I can't go on with this, I can't possibly listen to this anymore, I can't possibly look at that anymore, and it affects my life, then I think it's time to address it. And I think that's important for you too. If something affects your life to the point that you can't continue your normal activities in life, then maybe it's time to address it. So let me give you some questions that you can ask yourself when you're dealing with any type of underlying negativity or emotional trigger, so that you remember that you're always asking yourself questions instead of trying to convince yourself of anything, instead of trying to criticize yourself for anything, instead of judging yourself, instead of dealing with any negative inner self dialogue or any negative self-talk. Anytime you tell yourself something or you say, "That's so stupid, I shouldn't be thinking that," I want you to take what you say to yourself and transform it into a question. So if you said something like, "I'm so stupid, I can't believe I did that," transform that into a question. Ask yourself, "Why is that stupid? What about that is stupid? Why do I think I'm stupid? What is causing me to feel like I'm stupid?" Some of these are going to sound the same, but they're worded differently. They're worded in a way that you're exploring the different perspectives, the different angles of it. So I could ask myself, "Why do I feel stupid?" And then I could ask myself, "What causes me to feel stupid?" And you might think it's the same, but sometimes we answer questions differently. A why is going to bring up something more detailed with a lot of maybe emotions or opinions even, where the what specifically causes me to feel stupid might bring up some more specific examples of it. This kind of questioning is going to start unveiling stuff. So there's that aspect of when you're experiencing any type of negative self-talk, anything that you say to yourself that's not already a question, I want you to transform into a question. And if you have negative self-talk that already contains questions, I want you to transform it into a different question that maybe you don't ask yourself. And be okay being creative. I want you to be creative. So if you say something to yourself or ask yourself, "Oh, why did I do that? I'm so stupid." That's a question and a comment. So you can ask yourself, "Okay, why did I do that?" That would be a good question. "And why do I think I'm stupid?" I didn't change the first question, but I transformed the second thing, which was a statement of self-criticism, into a question. Or what caused me to feel like I'm stupid? Or how about these? Now, I want you to think of the what, when, how, why, and where type questions. You can put them into every single category. If I said, "What caused me to feel stupid? Why do I feel stupid? Where do I often feel stupid? When do I feel stupid?" I want you to play with all these types of questions. And I love the time questions. The time questions are sometimes the best. Because you can say, "Okay, do I feel stupid every day? Do I feel stupid at least once a week? Do I feel stupid at least 10 times a day? How about this?" More stuff with time. "When did I start feeling stupid? When did I define what stupid is?" How about that? Really start changing the questions around and playing with the wording of every single word in the question so you can start to unravel the grip that you have on these negative emotions so that you can pick them apart. Because like I was saying earlier, when you have the bigger picture of something, when you have connected all the dots, it's very hard for something like that to have a grasp on you anymore. It's very hard for it to be as much of a problem, if at all, anymore. Because what you've done is you've navigated to the parts that you resist about what it is. And that's why questions are the answers, is that you keep asking yourself things that cause you to dig instead of just telling yourself things. Or even worse, you might even say, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's because when I was two, this happened. That can be helpful. I mean, I've used that myself, but I think when you've done that enough, like maybe it's this, maybe it's that, that it probably hinders your progress more than helps. That's why it comes back to the questions. Questions always make your brain work differently. I mean, when I guest on other podcasts and other shows, when they ask questions, they make my brain work differently. I will answer things differently than I will talk about them on my show or in my blogs or my other podcasts. When I'm a guest and I get asked these questions, I come up with answers that surprise me. Not that I'm impressing myself. It's just I didn't know it was in there. You find out things that you didn't know were there when you ask yourself questions. So that's another reason asking yourself questions is a really smart way to go. And I'm going to come back to what I was talking about earlier about emotional triggers. I think when you have an emotional trigger, you are carrying something around. Let's just say that you react to what somebody says or does. You get really angry or you get really sad or whatever the negative emotion is. I want you to start with the most basic questions first. The basic questions are the ones that you would even say are stupid. This is reminiscent of an episode I did a while back called Stupid Questions That Lead to Healing. I think the stupidest questions are the best starting point. So if you get an emotional trigger, you can ask yourself, what am I triggered by? You might already know this one very easily. Well, I'm triggered by what he said. And then ask yourself the next stupid question, like, well, why am I triggered by that? And I call it a stupid question because the immediate obvious answer always comes to mind. Well, because anyone would be triggered by that. He called me a liar. How about that? I had an email recently that says, I don't like being called a liar. Well, let's look at that. He called me a liar. Anyone would be upset that they were called a liar because it indicates a mistrust. And I don't like that. I think I'm a trustworthy person. Okay, so you look at what you said or write down what you said. I feel like that person doesn't trust me. Now you dig a little deeper. Those are some basic, silly, stupid questions. But the deeper question might be, okay, why is it a problem that someone doesn't trust me? There's some more answers in there. It might not be the solution that you're looking for, but you're digging further and you're taking what you thought was obvious and breaking it apart even more to come up with even more perspective that will help you out. Why is not being trusted a problem? Or how about this? How is being a liar a problem? You might think that's a stupid question. Nobody should lie, or at least they shouldn't lie about a lot of things, especially this. Then you should be able to answer that easily. Well, lying is bad. It's immoral. Okay, why is it bad to be immoral? Another stupid question, but what this does, again, expands your brain. It continues to dig further. It continues to uncover what's going on inside of you. And as you uncover this stuff, you come up with more and more angles to what you're holding on to. Because the whole idea behind all of this is to loosen the grip of what you're holding on to, even if it's unconscious. If you're holding on to something unconsciously and you don't feel good every time you think about it or every time something triggers it, it's healthy and helpful to explore it. This is what I do in my life. If I get triggered, like for example, when I first started seeing my girlfriend, one of her ex-boyfriends she still had contact with very rarely. And I started getting a little jealous. Like, where's this jealousy coming from? What is this about? I shouldn't be jealous. I mean, I'm not worried she'll leave me. I don't even know where it came from. So I acknowledged it. I validated it. Hey, I'm jealous. It's okay. I have every right to feel jealous. And then I started asking myself questions, the stupid ones first, like, why am I jealous? That may not be a stupid question, maybe a perfectly legitimate question, but I knew why I was jealous. Well, I'm jealous because that's her ex, and maybe eventually she'll leave me and go back to him. Something like that. So, okay, let's get that one out of the way. Why is that a problem? What if she does leave you? How is that a problem? Well, that's a good question. Let's talk about that. Well, that's stupid because then I'll have a loss of love and I really thought that we were going to be together and continue to be together, but now I have this threat outside the relationship. Okay, so writing this stuff down, and I'm seeing these words come out, like being together and a threat and relationship. So I might ask myself, why is it important that you keep this relationship? Whoa, what kind of question is that? That's a dumb question. Good. I want to ask myself these dumb questions. Why is it important that I keep this relationship? Okay, well, let's explore that. How about this? Why is it a threat? Why do you feel threatened? When did you start feeling threatened? I'm going to ask these other W questions. Where do you normally feel threatened? Huh, that doesn't make any sense. That's okay. I'm throwing a lot at you right now. I know I am, but you know, these are the kinds of questions that I want to pop up in your mind, that when you start doing this, you're going to have a different perspective. I want you to leave every self-questioning moment with something new. You may not be able to resolve what's going on inside of you right away, but I guarantee you, you're going to loosen the grip it has on you, and you're going to be able to move through it in different ways, because there's a bottom line to all of this. The bottom line is the stuff that we carry around, the underlying negative emotions, the emotional triggers, all of that stuff that we carry around, we are typically holding on to because there's something that we don't want to accept as true. You know, there's that part of it. There's also things that we don't want to accept are real. So there's a little maybe layer of denial sometimes. There are things that we don't want to accept are possible. Inferiorities about ourselves that we don't want to accept, which is why I told you that you're not the best. You're not perfect. You have a lot of flaws. You have a lot of imperfections, and everyone else does too. Yeah, but they have more money. They're better looking. They're stronger. They're whatever. Okay, you're comparing yourself to the wrong person. See how I brought that full circle? But the whole idea about what I'm talking about today is making sure that you equip yourself with a tool that will help you and not continue to keep you in an emotional rut. The emotional rut consists of the underlayer of negative emotions that you might carry around, or the emotional triggers that might hinder your happiness in certain ways. And we want to make sure that we can address everything that comes up, so that when it comes up, we can talk ourselves through it by asking ourselves questions, which will help us feel better the next time it comes up. Because this stuff is going to repeat itself. Your emotional triggers will repeat themselves. But you'll find one day that what used to trigger you doesn't anymore. In fact, you'll be surprised when it doesn't. I have old triggers that when an event happens, I look at that and go, huh, I should feel bad about this, but I don't. Why don't I feel bad about that? Now I'm asking myself something that I feel good about. What's going on there? You don't have to pick those apart as much, because if you feel good about it, there's no reason to explore it. There's no reason to uncover or resolve any mystery there, because you feel good. So you really don't have to explore it unless you're kind of an investigative psychoanalyst. If you want to do it that way, you can. I don't necessarily do that. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do, because it's interesting to me. But if you feel good about something, then it's probably not an emotional trigger. You probably don't need to explore it. You might want to, but my point is, someday what used to trigger you won't anymore, and it will surprise you. But it involves work. It involves asking yourself those questions and helping to uncover all the facets of what makes up the trigger, or what makes up the underlying emotions. And it's all about questions. It's all about letting yourself explore through those questions so that you can uncover all those areas of resistance. Because that's really what it comes down to. What we typically are triggered by are the areas or thoughts or memories that we don't want to think about. And I know there are some people that have experienced awful things, awful trauma, awful abuse. I know that's the case. And questions like this might be hard to do or impossible, because somebody who's been abused might have an emotional trigger come up, and they might think, well, I'm not going to ask myself questions about that because I know exactly why I had this emotional trigger. I think we paint ourselves into a corner when we believe we know exactly why we have something, not because it isn't true, but because we stop digging deeper. Once we hit that point where we think, well, I know why I feel this way, then we've stopped thinking about it, we've stopped digging, we've stopped exploring, and we've stopped working on the process of healing. It's my opinion. I mean, you know, certainly if you're seeking therapy and going different route with this, absolutely, they're going to ask you questions. They're going to go the same route. This is the self-help show. So what I'm asking you to do is ask yourself questions, even the obvious ones. Because an obvious question might be, what's so bad about being abused? Terrible. I know it's terrible. It's terrible to think that anyone should ask themselves that question. But the reason I ask you to ask questions like that is to help you uncover what you might resist. And every time you work on uncovering what you're resisting and why you're resisting it, you help to loosen its grip on you. Anyone that's been abused, I absolutely have sympathy for you. I am absolutely on your side. I don't want you to feel worse. I want you to feel better. I want you to heal. And if you're not healing through support groups or therapy or any type of counseling or even expressing things to your best friend, if it's not going away, then maybe this is the route for you. I'm not saying this is a catch-all. I'm just offering another path for you to help you through this. And sometimes, yes, it does involve asking yourself questions that might even seem rude. Like, why would you even ask that question? Because I want you to face your resistance. I want you to heal through this. I want you to get better. And if you've tried everything else, maybe this is the path. And, you know, I'm talking specifically to people who've really experienced bad trauma. But I'm also talking to people that get upset because they have a flat tire. So it works for almost any situation. If you're carrying around any type of underlayer of negativity or emotional trigger, remember this. Listen to this episode again. I asked a bunch of questions, and there's a ton more. Remember the what, where, when, why, and even how. I mean, I talked about a how question. How questions are great. How questions break down processes in your mind. How questions are really good. It's probably an entire episode itself where I start talking about how. For example, how am I angry because of my flat tire? It's a weird question, but if you ask yourself how, you actually have to break down how you get angry. Again, this goes a lot deeper, but it's something to start exploring if you've gone through all the W questions and you really want to figure something out. It's pretty interesting what happens. So I may address that in another episode, but the how questions, if you can form these how questions, they may seem confusing at first, but you know, if somebody asks me, how do I get jealous? I'm going to have to come up with some facts. Well, I hear that person's name and I hear the inflection in her voice. And what happens inside of me is that I immediately picture her with somebody else. And that gives me a negative feeling. So what I'm doing is breaking down the process of how I get to jealousy. And that goes pretty deep. But it's an interesting process if you want to try that. This is the kind of cool stuff I learned in my studies like 15 years ago and I've been studying ever since. Is that how we word things and how we ask ourselves questions can really lead to different perceptions and a lot of the times, even healing. That's what I want for you too. I appreciate you tuning in. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons of the week. These are the financial backers of the show. I am very grateful for those who contribute to the show financially, and this is a portion of the list of people that contribute. Angel, good to see you. Angela and Kathleen and James. Lisa, again, good to see you too. Lisa, John, Kay, Amy, and Crystal. Good to see all of these names on the list of people that back the show. And of course, there's many more that I read a portion of the list every week. And I read that because I want to acknowledge you. Talk about acknowledging and validating people. I want to acknowledge you because you do give. And I am grateful. Grateful for you. Thank you so much. And thank you for anyone that gives to the show either through the Amazon button or the donate button at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. I appreciate you so much. And if you find value in this show and you have the means and would like to give back, head over to moretob.com. That's moretob.com, and you have an option to give monthly or one-time donation. And if you give monthly, you become a patron of the Patron Program, which is the membership site that gives you all kinds of free episodes and workbooks and worksheets and a video archive, and you're welcome to look through that once you're a member of the Patron Program. So if you find value in the show and you want to give back, head over to moretob.com. Thank you, patrons. I appreciate all of you. And a lot of other people give back in other ways. They share the show and they leave reviews, like this one from somebody in Kenya. Wow. This is somebody's name called Scam Revealer. So that's the kind of job that I like. People who reveal scams. So this is Scam Revealer from Kenya says, "This is the only podcast that sets off my day, calms me down, answers my questions, and directs my everyday life. It gives me answers I already had, but hearing it from you makes it even more empowering and directional. I appreciate this podcast more every day as it comes." Well, thank you so much, Scam Revealer. And because you gave me a good review, I'm going to assume that you don't see this show as a scam. So I'm glad you do what you do, if that's your job. If it's not, then it's still a cool name. Thank you so much, Scam Revealer from Kenya. I appreciate that review. And another person who goes by Grateful One from the United States said, "Thank you for putting this podcast out there. Thank you for sharing your expertise and your honesty." Spot on. Thank you for your review. I appreciate that. That feels so good. I am grateful for that. And one last person says, it's Lisa. That's her handle. Lisa says, "Great life lessons. You're amazing, Paul. This was one of the first podcasts I subscribed to over 3 years ago. In every one, there are nuggets of insight and tools for managing our thoughts and working through our issues, whatever they are. May you always be happy and at peace. Thank you, Lisa." Wow. Thank you, Lisa. Absolutely. I am so grateful for your words. And I love the end. I will always move in that direction toward happiness and peace. I will never succeed. I will never be completely happy and at peace, because I don't think anyone can be. This is one of those realities of the world. There are stresses. There is suffering. This is a very Buddhist concept that there's a lot of suffering in the world. So we have to respond to the suffering in a way that's empowering to us. I don't necessarily have a glass half full look at life like that, but I do accept that with every smile, there's going to be a frown, and with every happy feeling, there's going to be a sad feeling. With every moment of peace, there's going to be a moment of anger or violence. It's just going to happen. It's just the way life works. There's a dynamic that is inescapable. We can't escape the dynamicism. Is that a word? Of life. So we have to live with it. And this comes back to the four acknowledgments, or the four choices, I think I called it back then in an episode I did earlier. I think the episode is called The Problem with Resisting Your Problems, where I say there are four ways to look at things. And of those four ways, you're going to either suffer or you're not going to suffer. You look at a situation that you can't change. You can either reject and stay in that situation, which means if you reject it, you're going to continue complaining about it. You're going to continue feeling like a victim to it. And because you're not leaving the situation, or you can't get out of the situation, you will continue to suffer for it. It'll never end. So the reject and stay choice is continuing to suffer, in my opinion. Then you have the reject and leave choice, which means you reject what's going on and you leave the situation. Do you think that might get you out of suffering? In my opinion, it does. I think that when you reject something and you can't stand it and you leave, then it takes you away from suffering. It may not take you away from all suffering, but it takes you away from that specific challenge in your life. So you may have to do that. That's an acknowledgement. And I believe that decision could lead to less suffering or not suffering at all because of that. The third choice is accept and leave. So this is where you accept things for what they are and you leave it. Meaning you don't like the way it's going, or you don't like the way that person's being, or the situation the way it is, but instead of complaining about it, you accept that it's never going to change and you leave. I believe that also leads to less suffering or no suffering at all. In fact, this probably leads to a lot less suffering than rejecting and leaving. Because you've accepted that's who they are, or that's how the situation is, and there's nothing you can do about it. So it really helps you move on from that. But if you reject that's how the situation is or who they are, then you might end up obsessed about their behavior. You might think, why did they do that? I can't believe they did that. It just drives me crazy. Or why won't that situation change? It's not fair. I shouldn't have to be exposed to that. When you reject something, this creates resistance, and that resistance amplifies, and it causes you to stay in that victim mentality. So this is the difference between the reject and leave and the accept and leave. If you can accept it, that it won't change and that's how it is, then you can move on without thinking about it too much, because that's how it is. You just accept that it is. You may not like it, you may not understand it, but they are who they are, or that situation is never going to change, so why fight it? That's the accept and leave. Now, the fourth choice is accepting and staying. What this does is causes you to stop trying to change anything or anyone, because you accept things as they are, or the person as they are. And also you've decided to stay because you're no longer in victim mode because of it. Now, there's a lot of reasons why you can't leave a situation. And this is why it's important to determine which choice works for you. The accept and leave, if that works for you, great. You can leave and move on. The accept and stay might be the only choice you have, except reject and stay, which causes you to stay in victim mode while you're there. But getting out of victim mode sometimes involves accepting the things that you can't change or control, and accepting the people that you can't change or control, and telling yourself, there's nothing I can do about it, so why bother thinking about it? Why bother trying to change anything? Now, that sounds like a defeat, and sometimes it is. Sometimes you feel defeated, but I don't want you to treat it as defeat. I want you to treat it as acceptance. It's exactly what it is. You're accepting a person or a situation for what it is, for who they are, and also accepting that it will never, ever change. Imagine doing that with anything. That will never change, so you have no choice. Your choice could be to fight it. Your choice could be to resist it. This is right in alignment with what we were talking about in the first part of the show, where what you resist persists and amplifies. So if you're in a situation with a person, or you're in a challenging environment, if you are continuously resisting it and wishing it would change and always complaining about it, you're putting so much pressure on yourself. You're putting a lot of stress on yourself. But if you decide to accept that that's how it is, that's who they are, there's nothing I can do about it, I don't like it, but I'm just going to have to accept that's the way it is, then your focus comes off of wanting things to change and hoping they'll change and praying and wishing they'll change. And your energy goes towards something more productive, like, what are you going to do next for you? Because when there's a challenge in our lives, our energy is often focused on that challenge instead of what we're going to do next for ourselves. Because if we can't overcome that challenge, what are you going to do next for yourself? That's true self-empowerment. That's a true self-empowered reaction that will propel you out of any type of internal suffering. I'm not saying that the suffering stops. I'm not saying that at all, because sometimes the suffering continues. Sometimes you can accept things as they are, or accept people for who they are, but it doesn't mean that they're still not going to do things that cause a problem in your life. The real suffering that ends is your focus on wanting them to change, because that can take up a lot of bandwidth in your brain. If you focus on continuously wanting someone or something to change, that can be a lot of suffering in and of itself. So I'm trying to move you away from that and get you into a clearer, brighter space so that moving forward, you don't carry around the negativity. You move away from the negativity, or at least work with it in a way that causes less emotional pain and starts to heal the emotional wounds that you might have inside. So I hope what we talked about today is helpful. I am so glad that you joined me today. I'm so glad that my office will be finished by the end of the day tomorrow, probably. and then I can actually sit down at my computer. I'm so glad that you're here with me. Thank you again. And remember to always keep an open mind so that you can step into your power. This will help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.